I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, a women's work facilitator, mentor, and coach, and I assist women in optimizing their chances of having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment and leave a review, as this is how you can help us reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. The Natural Birth Podcast also has a Patreon page, so if you'd like to shout me a cup of coffee to show me your appreciation for the podcast, then you can do that there. Thank you for all your support and love. It's deeply appreciated. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Melanie. Melanie is a registered nurse from the Sunshine Coast in Australia. She has a passion for natural health and fitness and all things outdoors, and she's currently studying yoga and mindfulness with the hopes to open her own yoga studio for mums and bubs in the future. In this episode, she shares why, as a medical professional, she chose home birth over hospital birth, and her own natural and empowering birth at home. Curious about Melanie? Find her on Instagram as Melanie Joy. Hi, Melanie, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, Anna. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm excited to chat with you and hear about your beautiful first birth that you've had in your home, and hear about how that came about, how you decided to have a home birth, and the whole story. So with no further ado, do you want to kind of just start us off with sharing how you ended up going with a midwife and birthing in your home?
Our pregnancy was quite unexpected. We were actually traveling around Australia in a van that my partner had made, and we came home for a few months while we were planning a bigger trip, and it was on Mother's Day. I just started to feel a little bit funny. I don't know, I was looking on social media and there was all these posts about mums, and I just felt really funny that day, and then the next day my boobs started to really hurt, and so I decided, my partner was away at the time, so I decided to do a pregnancy test, and we found out that our little girl was on the way. Not that we knew that she was a little girl yet. quite early on, so we then I'm a registered nurse, so I really dove into learning as much as I could about pregnancy and birth, because I'd had a lot of friends. I'm 32, so I'd had a lot of friends go through birth, but it was just something that I hadn't really learnt much about.
Yeah.
And so in that time, I work at the hospital here in a different department, so I just thought that that was the avenue that we would take at that point and just didn't think anything of it. We went to the GP and just got a referral for the midwife program. And then when I was at work one day, I decided to look up the midwifery care plans and just see what would be involved in my birth. And when I did, I just found some of the things on the pathway quite hard to it just didn't feel like it resonated with me and my partner and what we would want.
And what were they? I would love to know. I would love to know what it is that doesn't resonate for you.
The induction, the at 10 days, and that was sort of like, yeah, without question. And then the immunization straight after birth was just something we didn't think was quite necessary, which is Hep B in Australia that they give straight away. And there was quite a few things, like it was like the care plan after birth, it was just a tick and flick, and that was quite concerning because every birth is different, and I knew that deep down I was going to have a normal birth, but at the same time it was scary to think that if I wasn't meeting these tick and flick protocols that I would get thrown in a different basket. So that was when we thought that maybe we might go down the home birth route, but because it was my first birth, me and my partner were erring on the side of caution. So we were lucky enough to get into the midwife program, which is quite hard to get into up here. So we went and met with the midwife, and there was just some, we just didn't niche, and it was just quite, walking out feeling disheartened about the whole system. And at the time, the COVID vaccine was very new and it wasn't something that we knew anything about, and there was a lot of pressure actually to have that as a pregnant woman, and it just wasn't something that we'd even looked at that point, trying to keep everything as natural as possible. And COVID wasn't a big threat in Queensland at the time, so I just didn't think it was something that I necessarily had to put my baby So we met with her, and then we decided that we might just look at a few other options, and that's when we found our beautiful home birth midwives. And it was actually listening to your podcast that made me really think about the home birth. It was just something that I'd never even thought about, and then finding you and just changed everything that I thought about. So that's why I really want to come on and share my story.
Love that. That's beautiful, Melanie. It makes me really happy. So I love that too, you know, how, because you are so obviously like being a nurse, like you're just so aware of that, what you just shared, like the checklists, right? And how there are, when you do go, whether you go, you can go with publicly funded midwives, you know, through a hospital that do home births, but they're kind of under the same regulations, right? They, you know, and everyone's different, all places are different, that, you know, they want to induce already at 40 weeks, 41 weeks, 40 plus 10 days and all these things. And yes, of course, you can always decline, but it is that kind of battle that has to happen with everything that you decline. There is that, it's not a nice feeling to have to go through. And if you know that, you go like, hey, actually, I rather pay someone who's independent, who will see me holistically and meet me from my unique needs and my desires, and respect that and understand that I am informed in my choices and not have to put me through all of those things. Because, you know, some things that you decline, you know, you might have, then the midwives might have to get in a doctor for like, you know, they have to also then tell you about the risks, and this whole protect the system, isn't it? To when you just have this simple goal, you know, desires, like, I don't want to do this, and I'm very well informed on why I don't. And then they have to go through these hoops sometimes, don't you, in the system?
Yeah.
And so you
That's exactly right. And it was, just a big concern, like when you had to meet all those protocols that might not suit our body, even though we believe that everything's going to be okay.
There is not one way fits all, you know, and there's so many women who don't fit that as well, you know, a lot of them.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
actually look at the induction rate, like come on, nature wouldn't create women that needs to be induced at this rate that we're currently seeing. Like, it's insane for no good medical reasons, right? And it's going down and down and down as well.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And in the end, the whole time of through my pregnancy, I believed that I was going to go at 39 weeks because that's how my mum went for all of her births. And then skipping forward to the end, I actually had to wait until 42 weeks. So it was just such a relief that I wasn't in that system having something breathing down on me to, to change my mind.
Yeah, totally. Wow. Yeah. See, like, you knew, you had that instinct.
Yeah. 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 So our midwives that we found, they were just two ladies on the Sunshine Coast that just, when the first time we met with them, was just amazing. They said everything that we needed to hear, because at that point we were quite nervous. We were 16 weeks and we were scared that we weren't going to find somebody who wanted to birth the way we wanted to. And then we found these two ladies and it just, yeah, changed everything. And it was able to relax and just enjoy what the process that was happening.
Beautiful. Lovely. Did you decide to have all the kind of routine checkups and everything, or did you deviate as well from any of those recommendations or offers?
Yeah. So, we had all of the ultrasounds mainly because we were just so excited. It was something so new to us and we wanted to see the baby at every chance that we could. But the gestational diabetes, I'd had a friend that was, she believes, wrongfully diagnosed with gestational diabetes, and it just sent so much more, pressure, and there was a lot more people involved in her care. And I'm quite fit and healthy and I've always eaten very well, and it just wasn't something that was really concerning to us. But saying that, I wasn't comfortable enough being my first birth to just not have the test. They opted to have the finger prick test. So in every morning I would just do my own blood sugar at home and then test it after I ate breakfast as well. And to me, being a nurse, I know that that's a very effective way of checking a blood sugar, and it was just a lot more comfortable than going and drinking something that I'd heard would make me feel really sick. And then maybe could the cutoff for what they mark as gestational diabetes is quite low in Australia, and so a lot of people end up going on that pathway when maybe they didn't need to.
Totally. And it's very interesting, actually, because I just found out just recently coming back to Sweden, not knowing obviously how all the intricacies of how they work here. And I just found out that actually here they don't do that test for all women. Only if you are in a high risk category do they actually offer you that glucose test. So I found that very interesting because, yes, it's quite religiously followed in Australia. And I know there's a lot of debate around this with midwives and just healthcare professionals going, you know, because it has been lowered, as you just said, the levels that we say, okay, so now you're in that risk category, you have gestational diabetes. Yeah, it's lowered. And so, yeah, a lot of women are then said to have gestational diabetes. And so, yeah, it's interesting how different countries and states, you know, depending on countries you're in, work differently and offer different things. And it's so important to know that, right? So to always understand that everything that's offered where you're at, you know, it is an offer. And in some places, there's a lot of routines that are in place. And in some places, they're a lot less. And so it really comes down to you actually educating yourself and going, do I want this or do I not want this? And realizing that everything has a benefit and a risk and, you know, a consequence, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I honestly, I wouldn't have known that that's something that I could decline if I was in the hospital system. And you just, in the end, you just want to do everything that's right for your baby. So if somebody's telling you that that's what you should be doing, of course, that's what you're going to do. And I was just so glad that I had two midwives that gave me another option. And it was very yeah, very special for us.
And I think that that's a really, you know, just important point, isn't it? That there's usually always options. There's usually not just one way. You know that as a midwife, like there's, or I mean, as a nurse, like there are so many options for things. Sometimes we may just give one or two, but there's actually probably five. Like, and there's always an option of doing nothing. And, you know, there's always alternatives, right? So really encourage women and families to explore that, you know, to truly their own instincts and intuition and going like, hey, something doesn't feel totally right about this routine. Like maybe I'll decline this, or maybe I'll just ask them for the different, you know, options surrounding, you know.
No, that's so true. And in the midwife group that I used, we had three, so every Tuesday, every 4 weeks from 20 weeks, I think it was, we'd get together with the other midwives who, I'm sorry, the other ladies who were birthing in our month. And a lot of, a few of them had already had babies. And so they knew what they could accept and what they wanted. And so it was just really empowering because I heard from other people what they would do. And it was, yeah, just a really great way to do it because every 4 weeks I connected with other ladies who were birthing with me. And educating me as well as the midwives were.
Yeah, so amazing. And that's why, like, I always encourage women to gather in circles, to gather in, you know, community of other women. And like when you're pregnant, especially, like, just find your tribe, whether that is, you know, in your local area or online. I mean, nowadays, especially since COVID, like, you know, a lot of things have gone online. You know, I have a community for women. It's a great way to feel supported, especially if you're a bit fringe or a bit alternative or want something outside of the mainstream. It's good to seek out like-minded.
Yeah, that's right. Because I don't know, pregnancy can be a time where you're feeling quite alone in your choices.
Yeah.
If you don't have somebody that you can talk to. So, yeah, it is so important to find those people. And, yeah, I was so lucky that I found it in the group that I was birthing with. Even though we were all so different, it was, just amazing, that connection with other women at that time, and now we'll forever be connected.
Love that. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk us through, like, did you have any early signs of labor approaching for you?
No, it was quite funny because, as I said, like, I ended up going to 42 weeks, and it was just something that I hadn't thought was going to happen. So I, just hadn't even factored that into my birth plan or my birth map. By 41 weeks, I started to get a lot of messages from people that had well-meaning thoughts, but it just started to put a lot of pressure. And mentally, I was finding it really difficult. It just, like, for some reason, I just thought, like, is this baby ever going to come? And I started to sort of believe that it wasn't, and maybe that I wasn't going to have the birth that I'd planned. So I had my mum and dad. So my mum and dad had come up from Victoria because the borders had opened, which in Australia we were all very segregated in our states. And so COVID hadn't actually been in Queensland at that point. And then the borders opened when mum and dad came, and it just sort of went rampant. So we were really just isolating, because if I or my partner had of got COVID, we wouldn't have been able to have the home birth. So I'd made my parents isolate, and we were isolating, and it just felt like the time, and it's all I could think about was the birth and when our baby was going to come. So it did start to get hard in my mind. And while I'd always thought that I was wanted my baby to make it, like, to choose its own birthday, I started to get a bit doubtful. And like my partner even, I got my partner to perform a stretch and sweep one day when we were 42 weeks, and it was very unsuccessful. We looked it up on the internet and it just, didn't work. And then the next day we had our midwife coming to the house to see us, and I asked her to do it, and she was really reluctant because it's not, she just believed that the birth was going to happen when the baby was ready. And I persevered, and she did it. She ended up doing an internal for me, because as soon as she looked up there, she saw my cervix was really high and towards posterior, so there was nothing she could do. So it was just, yeah, told me to relax and to stop overthinking it, which at that point I felt disheartened, but I took her advice. And we live on the Sunshine Coast in Australia, so we took a drive with my parents and my dogs up to Noosa and just decided to forget about it all. And I think for the first time I actually did in a couple of weeks. It was just a really nice, beautiful day, and we all had a really good swim and just sit in the sun. And then when I got home, I started to feel my first signs.
Yay! Isn't that a good message, though? Like, because I think this is something that definitely affects why sometimes we do go longer. And I really want to point out that you weren't overdue. You know, it's like, and this is the thing that just becomes such a stress for especially first time moms. And it's like so unnecessary and so damaging. Like, and it really kind of ruins your last days or weeks with your baby and being pregnant, because you're like, okay, I'm 40 weeks, so anytime now. And then you go for like that, maybe for 2 weeks before you actually have your baby, and might feel really stressed and anxious. And that actually makes you not going to labor. Like, that's the recipe for not going into labor. So we're kind of setting women up to fail with this whole due date business. And I always say to women not to give the due date to other people, you know, to say the due month, right? You can even, and if you want to say a date, like say the 42-day mark.
Yeah.
Because then no one will badger you before then. Right.
It's so true. And you know, even though I was listening to all of that at the point, I just had all these things and people in my head, and they don't know. All my mum friends, it was funny. I've got a lot of mum friends and I've got a lot of non-mum friends, and I didn't hear from them in that 2 week period. They were just waiting for me to message them. And then it was, people that didn't know, and that how that pressure can actually weigh up in your mind and things on pause.
Yeah.
Mm. And so pardon?
So you got home.
Got home, and me and my partner started, my parents weren't staying with us, so we put on a documentary, and then I just started to feel back pain every 10 or so minutes, and then not wanting to get my hopes up because of everything. I just mentioned it to him, and by that point it was about 6 o'clock at night, so we just did our normal thing that night and went to bed at about 10 o'clock, and then had an awesome night's sleep. So everything was really good and exactly the way that I had manifested it in the end, with being a day birth, because my whole pregnancy I'd been so tired. Towards nighttime, I really didn't want to be laboring through the night. So I had a great night's sleep that night and woke up at 4 a.m. And then, it was on. Not that I believed it yet, but it was, starting, because it was happening, because 4 a.m. the contractions still being in my back started to go every 7 or so minutes.
Okay, so it woke you up, so you couldn't really sleep through that anymore.
I could. Well, I mustn't have been able to, because I woke up and they weren't intense. Like, me and my partner went and took the dogs for a walk, and it was funny because my whole pregnancy I'd been in this such a good mind frame, and I was really, like, I was doing lots of meditation and lots of yoga, and I was really trusting in my body and my baby. And then that 2 weeks really threw me, and I started to just doubt everything. So even though somewhere inside me I knew I was in labor, I didn't believe it was what labor would actually feel like or what I'd imagined. So I still, I guess resisted it for a while. So we just went about our normal morning and did lots of oxytocin boosting things. So, we had sex and just enjoyed each other's company and watched a documentary about dogs because I just love dogs. And then decided to give my midwife a call and just have a chat with her. And she let me know that, she thought it was happening.
So by this time, you call the midwife, you went up at 4 a.m., you went up with the dogs, and then you were just hanging out. So what time did you call the midwife, and had it changed by then, or was it kind of still the same, just about every 7 minutes, a bit of back pain?
So about 10, I called her and I just told her about everything and just had a good chat, and she by the sounds of what I was saying, she thought maybe the baby was posterior. So she just told me to hop on my hands and knees as much as I could and to try and relax and listen to some meditation. We'd been doing a lot of meditation in our midwife group. So I just listened to a few of the meditations I've been listening to throughout pregnancy. And then things didn't really get serious. She called me at about 12 and I was still at that point. I just let her know that I was eating lunch and talking through a contraction. And I got my mum to come up and we had a chat because my mum's a midwife and she was quite concerned at the beginning about me having a home birth. So I got her to come, but we'd already spoken about her not staying for the birth because I was worried that maybe having her there would bring up some fears in with me. But in the end, it just turned out that my mum was, my biggest supporter, and she came over and we baked a cake and my partner made a pie, and I just still didn't believe that I was in labor. It just did not feel how I thought those surges were going to feel. So I it wasn't until 1:30 when I kept needing to go to the toilet, and I'd pooed about 4 or 5 times by that point. And it wasn't until about 1:30 I went to the toilet and I involuntary push that I realized that was actually happening.
Wow. So during this time, up until this point, did you still just have a bit of back pain every 7 minutes?
The pain had moved down into my pelvis, but like it got to the point where my mum knows me, I guess, better than I know myself, because I'd started to go really inwards and really just zoning out of what was happening in the room around me. And my mum knew, and being a midwife, she knew that I was a lot further along than what I realized. So it was, I guess, more intense and a little bit of back pain, but it wasn't until the surges were really, really serious that I started to believe that it was happening. So that was going into the toilet and feeling that involuntary push and, starting to make some noises that I didn't know that I had in me.
Okay. So is that, when you felt that, was that a change then in the character of the search? And did it feel different?
Yeah, it did. It felt like while still in my back, it just felt that I needed to push, whereas the other ones I was doing, it was that point that I forgot about my breathing, whereas all the other surges were just, it was inwards, but I was breathing through them all. So by that point, so the midwife came at about 2:30, and when she came there, they practice on doing like as little internals and everything as possible. So she, in our active birth workshop that we've done with her a couple of weeks before, they talked about the little line on the back for dilation. So she checked my back, and I had up what she thought was one, that I dilated 1 centimeter, and that all changed really quickly. So within an hour, it was way up there. So I just, in the end, it went from, I felt like, 0 to 100 very quickly.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. And the purple line that you're referring to, it is definitely something that I also look for. Not every woman will have that, but many will. It's a great way to, amongst other things, to see where you're kind of at without actually having to check dilatation like that. Checking dilatation has no real evidence behind it at all. So I'm very much of the same kind of midwifery school as they.
Yeah. Which is just, amazing, because it's so empowering too, that they trust what you're telling them and you're not having to, look all the time, like I've heard can happen in the other system. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, in some places in hospitals, they check every kind of 2 hours.
Yeah.
Is that crazy?
Yeah.
Okay, so she came around, or they came around. Did they just kind of gently enter your space, or how did they come into your space?
Yeah, just really, really observant. So by that point, I had my birthing ball, which was my savior through, my whole pregnancy, having a lot of pain in my back. And so I was over the ball, and because I hadn't really verbalized how strong everything was feeling on the phone, I believe she had got my partner to start filling up the pool, but it wasn't, where it needed to be. And she just came in and observed us for a little while, and then told him to get upstairs and keep on filling it. And so we had our birthing space in our bedroom, which I'm in a 3-story house. So I had to get up some stairs before I could get that relief of the pool. And so, we'd set up a beautiful space with lots of plants and, lots of photos of our baby and photos of us traveling, previously, and lots of affirmations and things like that. So, and photos of all the powerful women that we have in our lives as well. So it was just a really lovely space to come into once I could get up. By that point, it was, the surges were strong, but I was still having that little break. So I managed to get up the stairs quite easily and got in the pool. And that relief when I got in the pool was just amazing. So I got in on my own, and still I just, while I was just finding it so hard to move, like my legs were in jelly and stuff, but everything made me just retreat to that hands and knees position. I just kept, so as soon as I got in the pool, I just jumped into that position, and I had about 5 minutes alone with my midwife while my partner organized everything with the dogs and stuff. And 5 minutes to just reflect and catch my breath and realize that it was actually happening. And so it was, that water birth, if people can have it, I just think is just, such an amazing thing, such an amazing tool for women to use.
Do you want a natural birth, mama? Then the natural birth course might be for you. Do you see birth as a rite of passage and an important and transformational event that you'd like to feel fully empowered in meeting?
are you, like many other women, realizing that it is time to take back your power as a birthing woman in the birth space and birth your baby your way? Would you like to feel calm and confident as you birth your baby with all the tools you need in order to meet the labor sensations naturally and be ready body, mind, and soul? Do you deeply down know that your body was made to birth your baby and that you have all the inherent power and inner wisdom to do so? Are you looking for holistic midwifery wisdom and guidance to assist you and give you all the evidence-based information you need in order to feel fully sovereign in your decision-making around your pregnancy and upcoming birth? Then the Natural Birth Course is for you. Find out more at thenaturalbirthcourse.com. What was it that you loved about it, about being in the water?
Well, like here it was the middle of summer, and by the time I'd got upstairs, I was really hot and flustered. So I wasn't sure, because I'd heard that sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming being warm in the bath. But it was just when I got in, it was just, I don't know, it was maybe like a reset for my body. By that point, I guess I'd been using a lot of energy, and it was just a time to, gain my thoughts and realize, that it actually was happening. And I can't really explain it. It was just, relief by the water. I've always found water really calming and just, calmed any nerves if they were going to arise.
Beautiful. Yeah, well, it's called, nature's epidural for a reason. It's really, it can really be that relieving. You feel weightless, you can move easier with your big belly. Maybe it can be pain relieving for you, take away that edge.
Sometimes
it can just give you that pause as well for a few minutes, just to really relax in your whole being.
Yeah, and that's right. Like, I mean, towards the end of my pregnancy, I was 42 weeks in a Queensland summer, and the only relief I found was going down to the beach and getting in the water. So, to get in that water again at that point and, take all that weight off me was, just amazing.
Beautiful. So, so we're maybe, around maybe 3 o'clock now or something like that in afternoon?
So my mum left at 4:45, and that was when we went upstairs. So it was quite a big day, but I wouldn't say that I was in any, like, I was definitely not in active labour till at least 2:30 that day. So it hadn't felt very long. So I got in the pool at around 4:45. And then after that 5-minute break and my partner getting in, things got quite intense and with little break. So that was when started to make some noise and just really happen and let my body take over.
When you went to the toilet and you had that kind of involuntary feeling of pushing, which was like around 1:30 or something, you said, did that just continue? Was just like some of the surges felt a bit pushy? Was every surge pushy from then on?
No, it wasn't. No. So I had that involuntary one, and then I came back out and was on the ball, and things were still quite moderate, and it wasn't until about 4 o'clock that I started to groan and involuntary movements in my body.
Okay. So it was just that kind of one on the toilet to kind of make you realize that this was happening.
Yeah. I guess like my time's a little bit off with that. yeah, it might have been closer to when the midwife arrived at about 2:30.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's easier to mix things up. It's not really,
yeah.
It doesn't feel linear when you're in that space. You're kind of quite headless, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, right. So, yeah, we got a little taster then, but then it kind of just continued very mildly, moderately. And then you continued to labor for a few hours with the midwives there and your mom before you got upstairs into the bath. And that's when you really felt a shift.
Yeah. Yeah. I had felt it downstairs because I was waiting for a break to get up the stairs. But yeah, then I got my 5-minute break when I got in the water. So, they were still giving me a break downstairs though. And then it wasn't until I got in the water that there was no break, and it was just, yeah, it was really happening. So my midwife was amazing, and she just, I was sending a lot of energy out my throat, and making a lot of roaring noises, and, it was very ineffective at actually pushing the baby out. And so I still believe it was from going over. I just stopped trusting my body. And I had about a half an hour of this pushing, and I didn't believe anything was happening. Like I felt it all in my back, and I just felt like I really needed to poo, and it didn't feel like there was actually a baby coming out, or what I believed felt a baby coming out felt like. And I just kept, my midwife was trying to gauge where I was at and asking me lots of questions, and I found it hard to verbalize what I was actually feeling. And so by that point she started to get worried that I actually hadn't, that I was pushing against a undilated cervix, because of my vagueness in the questions she was asking. And so she started to get concerned and just thought that she would suggest doing an internal just to check that things were progressing. And at that point it was, I don't know, she said she's never seen anybody jump out of the bath faster, because I just needed that confirmation that I was actually doing it right. I had so much doubt in my head that it wasn't actually happening. And so I jumped out of the bath to get an internal. And so I laid down in the bed, and she just put her finger, she said, not even up to her knuckle, and bumped my daughter's head and just told me to get back in the bath. So, at that point, I just felt like I got all that confidence back, all that confidence that I'd had throughout my pregnancy, that I knew what I was doing, and I knew that my baby knew what it was doing. And and I was just ready to get back in and get her out. And at that point, I had to wait for another surge to come on the bed before I could get up. And, yeah, just now that I reflect on everything, it just, yeah, it makes me so sad that women in the past have had to birth on their back on a bed, because it's just so unnatural. And that was the worst contraction I've had, that I had the whole experience. And it was, quite difficult in that position. Yeah.
And, I mean, how amazing is it that you could really get that experience, just that one, to have that realization, because obviously this is not just in the past, this is today as well. You know, most women will still go up on the bed, lie on their backs, both because they think that that's how you birth a baby, but also because care providers encourage them to do so.
That
is actually how most women will birth their babies, because the indoctrination is so strong, right?
It just, everything in my body, it just felt wrong. Like I couldn't wait to get back in that pool and get back on my hands and knees. But when I did get back in the pool, so by that point I'll just mention that I had another midwife arrive, because in Australia, home birth you do with two midwives. So she came at about 5:30 and yeah, so she helped me get back into the pool as well. And at that point, my midwife, Mary, who'd been with me throughout the day, she just suggested that I should just use gravity because I was working a little bit harder than she thought that I needed to. So while it was really hard to move from that hands and knees position once I got back in the pool, she just got me to stand up and they helped support my leg, and my partner, I just hung onto my partner and pulled down on him, and it just took one surge, and I did three pushes in that surge, and I just felt everything move down. Like, I just felt her move down, and it just was the most empowering part of the whole experience because it just, I could just feel her right there. And my midwife could see that she was right there. So we got back down into the water at that point and did another push, and I just felt her head just pop its way out. So it was, yeah, the best feeling I think I have ever had.
Wow.
So I did feel the ring of fire, but nothing like I believed that I was going to in the lead up to it. Everything just felt really like it was doing what it needed to do. And then my midwife started to talk me through what was going to happen when my baby came out. So she talked about just letting my body do the work now, and I'd done what I needed to do, and that my body knew what to do with the rest. So that was like the best news I could have heard ever. And she got me to put one leg up, my partner in front of me, and put my hands down and breathe my baby out. So I, yeah, breathed my baby out and caught my little girl in my hands. And, yeah, it was just the most magical experience that I could have imagined.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And me and my partner just in shock, just, yeah, sat in awe while I brought her up. And I'd thought that maybe I was pulling, like, not knowing much about babies because it wasn't something that, you know, we'd had in our plans, and it wasn't something, I haven't been around many babies in my life. I was just, yeah, so worried that I was doing it wrong. So I pulled her out of the water and she came out, and we had a song that we'd been singing throughout her birth, and I forgot all the words, and I just held her and she was crying, and I was just worried that I wasn't doing it right. But it was, yeah, just beautiful and, yeah, very special moment.
Yeah.
And exactly what we'd imagined.
Beautiful. And, you know, that can be quite common to feel that, what you felt, right? Just,
yeah,
like doing this right. And like, especially as first time parents, like it can just be so overwhelming, and this little being, and it feels so fragile. And yeah, of course. Yeah.
And she was tiny. Like, she came out at 3 kilos and just like cooked to perfection. And so, you know, if she had to come out any earlier, it just, you know, she would have been too little. So she'd just chosen that day perfectly. And we were just so happy that it all happened the way it did.
Beautiful. And isn't that wisdom in itself, isn't it? You know, that your baby's normal was 42 weeks plus, yeah, one day or something, yeah, whatever you were.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, and yeah, you have this 3 kilo baby that's like, it's a very normal size baby, right? It's, I mean, there's a lot of normal, 2.5 is normal, 4.5 is normal, you know, but like it's in between that three. So it's definitely not overcooked, is it? She was, yeah, perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, she was perfect. And we found that out too, like when they, when I birthed, after I'd birthed my placenta, and everything, you know, was so healthy and just, yeah, it was beautiful, beautiful looking tree of life placenta that, you know, they knew that she'd just come to the right day that she needed to come to.
Exactly. Nature, yeah, is so wise. You know, very rarely would nature do something that wasn't wise.
Yeah.
You know, we need to start trusting women and their bodies and their babies and, you know, the natural process of pregnancy and birth.
Yeah.
Instead of mistrusting it so much as we do in this society today.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's so true. And I'd had friends that would that had birthed. So, yeah, so after she was born, we were just left in the pool and I breastfed straight after birth, and we just sat together and my partner moved behind me and just supported me because I just felt like absolute jelly. And there was just no pressure. And I'd had friends that had birthed in the hospital system and been their first baby. They weren't empowered to know that they could say no to the, is it Pitocin? Yeah.
Pitocin? You mean oxytocin? Yeah.
Yeah, the Pitocin to birth their placenta. And it was just when I reflect on it, you know, it wasn't even something that was a concern. I had no blood in the pool and everything was very normal. So we were just left to, you know, breastfeed our baby and bond for that first 45 minutes before I got out of the pool to birth the placenta. I've just had friends that have had so much pressure at that point, and I just reflect and it's like, you did it all so naturally until that point, and why do you have to jump in and intervene? And when everything was going so well. So we just felt so blessed that that we were given that time.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, it's like, if you're gonna meddle with a woman and the physiology, then you potentially need all those interventions to counteract what you've done and what you've created in the system, right? Or in the hospitals. But if you keep that physiology intact and you have a normal birth, why would you do anything then? To, you know, why would you still think that that woman was faulty and not be able to, you know, contract her uterus and, you know, do all the, you know, so it's that assumption that is made in the system that a woman's body needs to be managed, controlled, you know, that it's scary, it's faulty somehow, and needs, you know, it could go wrong. So we better do this before it goes wrong, instead of like you just shared, you know, that you had this beautiful birth, you got to have a bonding with your baby, you birthed your placenta, no worries, when the time was right. And this can be the reality for most women.
Exactly. And I think because by the time I did birth my placenta, it was out an hour and a half after her birth, and it wouldn't have happened like that in any other setting. And so we were just so empowered that I could just sit there and breastfeed my baby and bring that placenta out naturally. And I did when I began to try and get the placenta out, it was such a weird feeling because I obviously lost all that stomach muscle, and my midwife was telling me to cough, and when I coughed, I just felt so empty. And so I just had to naturally let it happen. And, it was one of the hardest parts, because you have all that strength before, but then at that point, you know, you've just got to let your body do its thing. And, and that's what we just waited, and I breastfed and sat and waited for it to happen. So it was, really good.
Yeah, and that's the best way, isn't it? To breastfeed and to bond with your baby keeps that oxytocin high, which contracts your uterus, because after your baby's born, you still have afterbirth pains to both contract the uterus to expel the placenta and also to contract down to prevent bleeding and to close the wound inside and all of that.
Afterwards, one of my biggest fears was having a tear. My midwife had a look and everything was all like just perfect down there. And I just had my perfect birth, and it was, yeah, one of the most empowering ways to go into motherhood and parenthood for my partner, because it was exactly what he needed and we'd imagined, and yeah, it was great.
Beautiful. So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now, is about to have her first baby, and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Just to listen to your body and your baby, and to just trust your own instinct. And I just found it really hard when I would listen to other people's bad experiences. There's so many positive birth experiences out there, so just really inundate yourself in all those positive births and take with you what you need to take, and just know that women have been doing this for thousands of years, and yeah, you've got all the women behind you. That really helped me through.
Love that. And I really feel like the wisdom from your story is the whole thing about realizing that your baby has its own timeline.
Yeah. Right? yeah.
Your perfectly healthy baby's timeline was 42 plus one.
Yeah.
And your placenta's timeline was 1.5 hours.
Yeah.
If you'd been in hospital by 1 hour, they wanted to take you up to the surgery, right? To theater, to, you know, surgically remove that placenta. Mm. Was there a need for you to do that?
Oh, 100% no.
And, you know, did you have a big bleed? Were you, you know, no. So this is just, there's so much wisdom in your story, right? About timeline and about how you definitely did not fit the mold. But you are a perfectly healthy woman, a low-risk baby, low-risk mama, low-risk pregnancy, and this is what your normal was.
Yeah.
And this is why these stories are so important and why your story is so important to tell. Because if you had been in that more rigid system, you would not, you know, you would have a very different story to tell. You would have been pressured into an induction. You know, if you had had, you know, your baby and your placenta taken that long, you would have gone to theater. You know, yes, you could have declined, but that would have been a big, big battle for you to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something that you'd find it so difficult to do at that point as well.
Of course, like because you yourself were doubting yourself the whole way through even to birthing your baby because of this, right? Even though you logically knew that pressure from the outside, even though you had home birth midwives going like, you're fine, your baby's fine, your timeline's fine, you're still feeling that pressure from the outside, right? And doubting.
So
it tells you that even to someone like yourself who went to all these lengths to have this natural and empowering birth, still you had that. And so I believe you know why I say that is because you're not alone, right? Because that is like 99% of us. We're so, of course, naturally affected by our environment. And that's why what you just said about just focus on the natural and positive birth stories, like try to really, you know, create a safe space around you as you are pregnant and protect your energy and only focus on what you do want. And all these things are so important, and really do understand what you do want and make sure that happens for you to the best of your ability. Of course, we can't control everything and so on and so forth. But I think that your story is so important because everything was so straightforward, beautiful, and normal, but still there was so much doubt in that process.
No, that's so true. It's so true. And it's, no matter, I thought that it was going to go a completely different way and she decided to do something, you know, completely different to what I had planned. And that's just how it goes sometimes. And it doesn't mean that it's not going to be exactly what you and your baby needs.
Most likely it will be just what your baby and you needs. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Melanie, for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.